You're listening to The Work-Life Equation, the Bright Horizons Family Matters podcast for busy working families. Whether you're a working mom, a dad, or you're busy caring for other family members, we've got tips for how to fit jobs and families together and for how to make your work-life equation add up.
Hi, welcome. I'm Lisa Oppenheimer, and today we're talking to two child development experts about some of the most common challenges in parenting and how to turn those moments of frustration into moments of learning and parenting success. So first, I'd like to welcome Ellen Galinsky. Ellen is the Chief Science Officer at the Bezos Family Foundation and also Executive Director at Mind in the Making, a program of the Bezos Family Foundation, as well as author of the book, Mind in the Making, The 7 Essential Skills Every Child Needs. Ellen, welcome.
Thank you, and thanks to Bright Horizons for having me today. Mind in the Making is a now 18-year-old initiative where we've looked at the research across child development to try to understand what we can do and what we can help our children do so that we thrive and so that children thrive. And in the course of doing this research and going out and interviewing and actually videotaping the research of more than 100 researchers in child development, I discovered that one of the most important things is what is called executive functions, or I call life skills. And those are the skills that children need so that they can thrive. Those are processes in the brain that we use to remember information so that we can use it, so that we can think flexibly, so we can respond to situations as they change, and so that we can set goals and achieve them and not go on autopilot and do whatever comes into our minds. So these are life skills that help little children, help adolescents. I'm now writing a book on adolescents, and help us as adults.
That's great. Ellen, thank you so much. Next, I'd like to introduce our own Rachel Robertson. Rachel's the Vice President of Education and Development here at Bright Horizons. Rachel, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Lisa. I have been working in the field for, I think, over 20 years. I started out as a toddler teacher, so this topic and thinking about executive function and life skills is fascinating to me. I now lead the curriculum and education and training teams at Bright Horizons. Like most early educators I know, I'm a big fan of Ellen's work, and we work on these life skills and executive function in our centers all the time with the children. And probably most importantly, I'm also a parent of two daughters.
Thank you so much to both of you. We are going to start by talking about some common parenting challenges. And before we get started, I'd like to kick things off by playing a clip from a video that Ellen, your team at Mind in the Making, produced.
Are you hungry?
Hungry.
Okay, you know what your job is, say? Look at Mommy. Your job is to find the placemats. Do you know where they are?
Often I see myself as a coach to help him.
Have you washed your hands today?
Now, of course, there's a reality of I'm looking at the clock. I am looking at the fact that he's not eating. I'm looking at the fact that I know what time he has to get up in the morning. So it's always a calculus of providing the space and room for him to problem solve.
Secret ticket is called.
And also the reality of moving things along.
The only way.
That's a very telling clip, especially that part about being a coach. I think it's really insightful to be able to see that moment, those moments as an opportunity to teach lifelong skills that could prevent future challenges versus what a lot of times people are thinking of those moments as something to just get through. We work on this as educators as well. It's not an easy skill or mindset, but responding to behavior as an opportunity to develop skills can feel to some parents maybe like they're letting the children be in charge, but really, I love this idea of thinking of it instead as teaching a child how to think versus simply how to follow rules. Maybe that perspective is what will help parents get through these tougher times, although, of course, it's really tricky mindset to be in when you're in the heat of the moment.
We need those skills ourselves when we're in the heat of the moment.
Right, right.
Well, let me tell you how I got into the notion of this kind of approach to discipline. In looking at the research, I was looking at what What do parents do starting very, very early that help children thrive then when they're 1, 2, 3, and 4 year olds, but also help them thrive later on when they're both adolescents and adults? And looked at research that's called autonomy supportive parenting, began to look at that and look at it increasingly seriously. People like Stephanie Carlson at the University of Minnesota, Clancy Blair at New York University, Wendy Grolnick at Clark University have been discovering something that I don't think many of us know about, which is that if we support children in learning skills rather than just managing their behavior, that will that really actually helps them. I think it is not giving in to your children. The adult sets the rules, but it's how you enforce those rules, how you present those rules that makes a difference. I think at the adult end, we see so many adolescents and college-age students falling apart when they leave home, high rates of depression and anxiety, books that are talking about young people as if they're a nation of sheep. What's the problem here? The problem is that we're often trying to fix things for children, trying to solve problems for them, rather than little by little giving them the skills. People who study what's called autonomy supportive parenting look at four things that are important. The first thing is enabling, which is that the adult doesn't fix it for the child. The adult helps the child take an active role in solving the problem, maybe not exactly in the heat of the temper tantrum, but later. But beginning quite early helps the child take an active role in figuring out how to comply with the rule or the direction. This, again, is not being letting kids do anything they want. It's having rules, but it's how we enforce those rules. The second ingredient that's important is the adult takes the child's perspective. That is, if the child is flipping out over, "I want your phone right now. I want it now," and the parent doesn't want that, the adult says, understands what the child is thinking and feeling, maybe even remembers wanting something so badly that you can't fully manage, and takes the child's perspective. "I know you want that, but you can't have it right now. So let's think of something else that you want that you can have." The adult scaffolds, and what that means is the adults help the child in ways that provide a challenge that's hard but not too hard. You can think of it as Goldilocks. It's just right. It's not it's not anything the child wants to do. It's not over-controlling the child, but has a challenge that's just right. And finally, the fourth thing is supports. The adult encourages the child, but makes it clear to the child that she's there to help versus standing back and doing nothing or jumping in and taking over or being critical. So there are four ingredients to this kind of parenting: enabling, taking the child's perspective, scaffolding, and supporting.
That's so interesting. I think I've heard it even called a crisis of what's happening with children now growing up and not being able to cope, manage with emotions, make just critical decisions. And I've thought about that as a lot as a parent. And I find even with my own children, knowing as much as I do about early development and child development, that it's really a lot easier to use those things like those four ingredients when I'm thinking about raising capable adults rather than thinking about the moment I'm in, and that my end goal is really to have my children thrive and succeed long term. So it sounds like with these four ingredients, it's a pretty nice formula when faced with challenging behaviors that parents can just think about these four ingredients to help them through, and what you've called now skill building moments, those behavior issues that commonly happen, and parents can turn those into teachable, coachable moments.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is totally hard in the moment. If your child is grabbing for your phone and you're in a store or you're somewhere and it's like, you know, it turns into a meltdown or something like that, it's hard not to to think of how to manage it. So you may say no right then and there. "No, you can't have my phone." But later on, you may say to your child, let's say you're going to give the phone at another time, you can say, "Last time you had a really hard time giving it back, so I want you to come up," I'm talking about a four-year-old now, let's say, "I want you to come up with a plan where you can give, you can manage when it's time to give back the phone. So I want you to have an idea. Before I'm going to give you the phone, you have an idea. So it's not always in the heat of the moment, but it's like looking at parenting through with a new set of glasses, where your job is not to fix things for children and to give them the skills. I think we do that. You know, it's sometimes easier to do it ourselves or to fix it than to you know, risk the meltdown or the temper tantrum or the taking the phone away or those sorts of things. But in the long run, that child who hands you back your phone or manages when it's a transition is going to be a lot easier.
That's so interesting. You've mentioned the phone and some other issues, and I'd love to put some more practical spins on this. We talked earlier about the heat of the moment, and I'd love to talk a little bit more about that, because there is no greater heat of the moment for parents than the meltdown. So your four-year-old is crying and melting down, and you're close to tears yourself. Ellen, what can you tell parents about how to respond to something like that without falling apart?
The skill that we want to teach there is how to take on a challenge instead of avoiding them. So let's talk about that four-year-old and who is melting down when things don't go the way that she had hoped. How can you handle it? And the first thing is, I think, be there for your child and say, I understand your feelings. Try to use a calm voice. If you need to hold your child, hold your child. And then practice the skill of taking on challenges yourself. If you need to step back and you need someone else to help you take that, or do what is called creating a distance. The research of Ethan Kross of the University of Michigan has found that if you look at an emotional experience from what he calls a self-distance perspective, and that means looking at this as if it's not happening to you, it's like on a television show or it's in the heat of the moment, you're imagining that you're looking at this as a fly on the wall versus living it, that really helps you manage in that moment. I know one parent whose kid would fall apart at the checkout line in the supermarket and would always throw himself on the floor and have a tantrum if he wanted candy. And she just would imagine she was in some crazy television show and step back and look at it. And that really helped her manage it, because she could have a sense of humor about it and say, oh, you know, that really was dramatic. It's not going to work, but it was really dramatic. If there's going to be a change in routine, you can prepare that child for that change so that they know that something's going to be different. Another thing that you can do is to celebrate your child's hard work. If you can help your child come up with new strategies for dealing with frustrations and disappointments, particularly in advance. I know that with my son, when he would have meltdowns, we had a family meeting with him and we talked about what are you going to do starting to go into a meltdown. And he said he wanted a secret word that would help him. And the word was cut, stop, that is all of that. And we would say to him, and when we could see the meltdown brewing, cut, stop, that is all of that. And he remembered that he wanted to try really hard to manage. Think about that. What he's doing in that situation and what we're teaching them is how to manage themselves rather than we're controlling their behavior. So the rule doesn't change. That is, we're not being permissive. We're not letting kids do anything they want. They can't have that candy. They're going to learn to manage their strong emotions, which is the skill of the preschool years to learn to manage, and they're going to learn to take on that challenge. We're giving them that skill. We're not just managing bad behavior. We're promoting a skill.
Yeah, that you said so many things there to describe that moment that I think are really powerful and important for parents, but also just for educators. And I was laughing as you're talking about the parents in the meltdown moment of the child having a meltdown at the checkout lane, that easily also sometimes turns into a parent meltdown, and how important it is that parents are using their executive function skills in those moments as well to make those decisions, like, I can see this from a movie, or I remember that I'm really helping my child build long-term skills, because you're absolutely so important to think about that we want children to go through those challenges. They need us to step back and not fix everything for them so they can learn how to get through it. Love that story of your son figuring it out for himself and having a word and coming up with it, because I think that's something we miss when we fix it for children, right? We miss that they are able to come up with some really good strategies themselves. So not only can they come up and get through the challenge or the tricky moment, but they can also, they have the resources, or they can build their own resources. And the, another important point I thought you made earlier and then in this explanation too is just, it's okay if you don't make it the exact right choice in the moment, but coming back to it later is just as impactful and meaningful as a parenting moment. It's not a one shot and you're done. You really can continue to work on this. It's a progressive strategies rather than you just get this one shot and otherwise you've missed it.
Yeah, I mean, Ed Tronick at Boston University talks about the important aspect of growing is that fixing things that don't go well. And kids can know that I got too upset, and here's how I managed, and now I want to help you to learn ways to manage. I do want to say a word about the bystander at the supermarket checkout, because we can end up being very judgmental of other people's parenting and other people's children when we are a bystander to a meltdown. And I was the parenting expert for Fred Rogers, Mr. Rogers, of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, in a series that he did called Mr. Rogers Talks to Parents a long time ago. And he had the notion of one kind word, which is if you see a child or a parent in a really tough moment, say, instead of, oh, God, you know, you shouldn't do that, or you know, or, oh, my child would never do that, or whatever judgmental thing we want to say that makes it worse for the parent, we should give one kind word like, oh, I've been there. I know how that feels. You're really managing it well. So if we as adults can support other parents in those meltdown moments, we are giving them a gift too.
I think every parent on earth just gave you a giant thank you for that. I mean, we've all been there. I actually was really grateful to a docent in a museum once when my daughter, who was a couple years old at the time, laid down on the floor crying and on her back. And the very lovely docent came up and looked at her and said, well, that's such a lovely way to appreciate the frescoes on the ceiling. It really turned everything around for all of us.
Yeah, and it can just be those small things these are no big things. These are all small things. But again, the notion is always to remember what you want to do is to teach your child a skill rather than fix it for your child.
Okay, so I want to go move on to another big one for parents. This is a word that we all hear over and over again, that word no. We've heard that no is a child showing independence, but as parents, it's still a tough word to deal with, and we have to figure out that line, you know, helping babies understand that some things, helping children understand that some things are just non-negotiable. Ellen, how do we deal with no?
Well, it's different at different ages. If you've got a baby, you want to use the word only when you have to. One thing that's good is to try to create a yes environment so that there are not so many things that your child can do that you're always having to say no, no, no. You need to save it for something that really matters. With the baby, you can say no, you can use a signal that means no and teach your child a hand signal that means no. You can use a tone of voice that helps your child, not harsh, but just like serious tone of voice. And you can distract your child. Babies are it's easy to say, you know, you don't want to wash your hands before you eat or whatever it is. Oh, let's look at the new way that the soap works and let's make bubbles. And, you know, pretty soon the moment is past. But I think important for children of every age is the reasons that you're saying no. This is the research of Martin Hoffman at New York University. And he also looked at how do we discipline, found out that we're just saying no all the time. No, 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 no. All the time, it kind of loses its meaning. But when you do have to say no, for those moments when you do have to say no, the children are more likely to be compliant if you give the reason how your behavior affects someone else. When you grab that toy from someone else, look at Milo. I'm thinking of my grandson's best friend. Look at Milo's face when you grab that toy from him and see he's upset too. So let's figure out a way that you can have a turn with a toy but not grab it. Wendy Grolnick's research, which goes all the way through high school, has found that this way of parenting starts very early, and it's not being permissive. It's not being, you know, parents want to be strict. What's important is being consistent. But again, always thinking about teaching the child a skill, not fixing it for the child.
Yeah, that notion of a yes environment makes a lot of sense, and we try to set that up in all of our Bright Horizons classrooms and centers. Then you can just avoid altogether the need for an adult to say no to children, so it is really meaningful, and that when you do have that conversation or have to say no, then you have the time to explain the reason, and you have a reason as an adult because you've been thoughtful about the environment and the expectations. And I think that gets into what you were talking about earlier in those four ingredients, is that scaffolding and thinking about what a child is really capable of at the developmental stage they're in, and not to expect too much from them, but to just get that just right Goldilocks notion is such a great analogy for everyone to think about. And so you're, you know, really treating the child with the right expectations and asking them to do what they are capable of, and then just taking them a little bit further, making sure that your environment and your quote-unquote rules of the household support that. I think that idea of looking behind the no and seeing the child as a person developing their own thoughts and opinions, that's really a good thing, right? Even though in the moment when they're saying no, no, no to you and you really just need to get in the car, it's tough to handle.
Mm-hmm. And then, these are really hard to handle. And again, we're the role models much more than we say is what we do. So if we can work on managing ourselves, then we can help our children manage much better. And so we're not just we're feeling this in our hearts, not just in our minds, about why these really are the important life skills that help children succeed.
Right. Yeah. And in all these moments, I know we've talked a little bit about it, but adults can really feel their executive function in action when they're having to resist having a strong response to their child's behavior. And in those moments, you as an adult can kind of empathize with the child because with all of our experience and knowledge, we still struggle with it sometimes. And we can really see how those Yep. little children with, 2 years worth of life experience are certainly going to struggle with making decisions and self-control and behavioral choices. But we can also see in those moments, and maybe out of those moments, just thinking about it as parenting and having some thought about how you want to approach parenting, we can really see how executive function or life skills make all the difference for children. And the more time we put into helping children develop those things when they're young, the easier our lives will be long-term as a parent, but also their lives will be long-term. Can you just talk a little bit more about executive function and developing that early on and how that helps, although it takes more time, how that helps the child long term?
Yes. The one thing that I always say is that it's never too late. So if you're listening and as a parent and you've got older kids, it's never too late. But starting at the beginning is good, but again, it's never too late, which is really critically important. Executive functions are, again, the basic brain processes that take place in the front part of our brain, the last part of our brain to develop, that pull together our social, our emotional, and our cognitive capacities to achieve goals. They're always goal-driven. And the reason that they're so important is that the people who do well in the world, whether they're a three-year-old making a plan at a Bright Horizons program, or whether it's an adult figuring out how I'm going to manage the day with everything I have to do. Having goals and trying to achieve them is a key to living a life much more intentionally.
Right. Yeah. As I'm listening to you, I'm listening both as an educator and as a parent, and probably a little bit more as a parent, and thinking about these are exactly the things I want for my children. And certainly as in my education mindset, I'm fascinated by all the research, but just thinking about these as skill-building moments and the tools you've shared, I think whether as a parent you have interest in or time to dive into the research part, you've really helped these turn some research into some practical tips and advice about how to look at these moments as these skill-building moments and how to think about parenting strategies overall.
Thank you. I mean, I'm continually learning. When I first began looking at this, I didn't understand how powerful executive functions were. And then by looking at the research across disciplines, I learned that this is really what, these are the skills across many different academic disciplines that help children thrive. And then how the next question is, how do you promote them? So it's a constant learning process for me. What we've done is we've written up a number of the real moments that all of us have as parents. I, as a grandparent now, I certainly as a parent, I was a preschool teacher too, so when I was a teacher, how can we deal with these really tough challenges in parenting and not see them as just managing bad behavior, but how can we ultimately see them as the opportunity to teach kids skills that help them become the kind of children and then the kind of teenagers and then the kind of adults who will really thrive in the world.
You know, speaking as purely a parent and not an educator, what I find so heartening is what you had both spoken about some time back in the conversation about it being progressive and the fact that you can go back to things and that it's a learning process for everyone, which I think is really heartening for those of us that are still engaged in it.
Yeah, no, this is research that Carolee Howes did, and she was looking at who make the best teachers. You know, it's not necessarily the name on the door, although I know you have a wonderful name on the Bright Horizons door, but it's the person and the people who are ongoing learners about how to be better teachers make the best teachers. So I think that that's so critical. The people who are ongoing learners about how to be the parent we really want to be, if we've totally blown it, which we all do a lot. Next time, what's one little thing that we can do better? Those are the people who make the best parents.
I think that is a perfect place to wrap up this conversation. You've given such great advice. I want to say thank you again to both of you, Ellen Galinsky, Chief Science Officer at the Bezos Family Foundation, and Executive Director at Mind in the Making at the Foundation, as well as author of the book, Mind in the Making. And Rachel Robertson, thank you also, our education and curriculum leader here at Bright Horizons. Thank you both.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
If you like what you heard today, get more of our podcast by subscribing. While you're downloading, let us know what you thought or give us a share. Thanks to everyone for being here. We look forward to seeing you next time as we help make the work-life equation add up.